Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 16th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week Alan Feldman joins the podcast, where he discusses his two roles in responsible gaming at the International Center for Responsible Gaming and the International Gaming Institute at UNLV. The GGB podcast is brought to you by IGT's Peak family of cabinets, performance-driven and player-tested across the board. Find out why operators bank on the power of the Peak at igt.com/peak. Alan Feldman has a long pedigree in the gaming industry. His first role was with Mirage Resorts as the Vice President of Media Relations. When Mirage was purchased by MGM, he became the Senior Vice President of Public Affairs. At the same time he retired from MGM Resorts, he was appointed Chairman of the International Center for Responsible Gaming, and a short time later was named Distinguished Fellow for Responsible Gaming in a newly set up group at the International Gaming Institute at UNLV. In this podcast, he speaks about these roles and why emphasizing responsible gaming in a cohesive and effective way was so important to the gaming industry. He spoke with me at G2E in Las Vegas in October. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Our guest today is Alan Feldman. Alan is wearing two hats. He's the chairman of the International Center for Responsible Gaming, and he's also the Distinguished Fellow for Responsible Gaming from the University of Las Vegas International Gaming Institute. So, Alan, thanks for joining us. It's a pleasure to see you here.
It's great to see you, Roger. Thank you.
So, you know, I just mentioned you had to wear two hats. How do you, is there a way you can segment them, or are they really symbiotic?
Well, they are symbiotic and a little bit overlapping, and once in a while they need to be segmented.
Right.
I mean, obviously, as chair of the ICRG, there's a fundraising role that I play there, and now that I'm working at UNLV, there's occasionally a fundraising role there, too.
Right, sure.
You know, fortunately, the work that these two organizations do is symbiotic,
yes.
But it's also separate.
Right.
And that does occasionally take some explanation. You know, at UNLV, we principally do applied science,
applied research,
trying to understand what's going on in the marketplace and how are the things that we know about responsible gaming being applied, and are they of any use? And we're at the very, very, very infancy of that. As opposed to at the ICRG, where we started with what is problem gambling?
Right.
What does that actually consist of?
Sure.
And what does it look like, and how do you develop treatments? And we've made enormous progress in the 20 years that we've been doing this. We've established baseline research that's now in practice. The very fact that disordered gambling is considered a substance use disorder is because of the work that scientists who are funded by the ICRG have done. But now there's plenty of other work to do,
right?
What's going on with subpopulations? How does gambling interact with different races and different genders and different ethnicities? How is gambling even contextualized in those communities? What is the impact of COVID going to be? We all know we have a looming mental health crisis coming in this country and, frankly, around the world. How is that going to interact with gambling, particularly now as gambling is undergoing this explosive growth, both online and even to some extent land-based. So there's a lot of work for both organizations.
Yeah, no question.
Again, symbiotic, but still a lot of work ahead.
Right. So, you know, we've been seeing an increased emphasis on responsible gaming over the past year or two. I think that is corresponding with the legalization of sports betting. Do you agree with that, or are there other reasons why we need to pay attention to that even more?
So I think that we've seen an increased discussion of responsible gambling. I don't know that we've actually seen the kind of movement in responsible gambling that the industry needs to take.
Right.
And what I mean by that is this. Whenever there's a discussion of responsible gambling, the industry will talk about its commitment to responsible gambling.
Right.
And I don't doubt that at all. It's true.
Yeah.
The problem is that the regulatory community has defined responsible gambling as knowing what problem gambling is all about.
Right.
And therefore, the commitment that is made is to comply with regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And so the commitment to responsible gambling is to train all of your employees what problem gambling is mm-hmm. all about. And to have information available to customers that they might be able to understand what problem gambling is
sure.
about and have
right.
a phone number to call if they need help.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is that that's not responsible gambling.
Right.
Responsible gambling is actually telling a customer what to do
mm-hmm.
in order to keep gambling
right.
safe and affordable and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the industry needs to step up into that space. Doesn't mean not complying with the regulations. It may also mean, frankly, getting in front of regulators and asking them to change their point of view about
right.
this.
Sure.
We clearly need to do a better job of explaining what disordered gambling is, what problem gambling is, and what it means. But that's also government's job.
Right.
That's also the public health sector's job.
Mm-hmm.
That's also the education community's job. We're not alone in that.
Right.
That's really what the Reno model is all about.
Sure.
Shared responsibility
mm-hmm.
among all sectors.
Right.
So we've got to be able to define that all a little bit better. From the industry's point of view, I said this on a panel just the other day. If you go into a bar and you were to say to the bartender, I just turned 21.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been, it's my first time in a bar.
Right.
Tell me about responsible drinking.
Mm-hmm.
The bartender will almost certainly say, well, generally that means 1 to 2 drinks a person. You
right.
should take it easy, especially your first time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are going to drink, give me your keys and I'll put them behind the bar and you take a cab home or Uber home.
Right.
Or if you're with friends, and I hope you are, then designate one of them to be your driver, and I'm happy to provide sodas all night, water all night, whatever
right.
they want. That's responsible drinking,
right?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The bartender doesn't hand you a brochure that tells you the 8 ways to determine whether or not someone's
right.
an alcoholic.
Right.
In the gambling industry, we aren't doing that.
Mm-hmm.
We immediately jump to addiction.
Right.
And I'm talking about finding the space before we ever get there.
Yeah.
And being more proactive with our customers to actually identify what responsible gambling is all about.
Sure.
And it's not about being less focused on problem gambling. I don't want society to back away from it. In fact, quite the contrary. I'd
right.
much prefer to see, especially the federal
sure.
government, actually engage on this topic.
Mm-hmm.
But for the gambling industry, we've got to own responsible gambling.
Right.
And really get into it more and
mm-hmm.
define it better and promote it better beyond just we are committed to it and we train our employees
right.
in understanding more about problem gambling.
Right. Well, it's almost like we have to return to the beginning of the ICRG, then the NCRG, when it was formed by Frank Fahrenkopf, and he knew we had to get ahead of that of this issue, and that's why he got the industry to agree to form this organization, which has been a boon for the industry because we funded all these things. We didn't know anything about responsible gaming or problem gambling before that. I mean, there were so few crazy studies that had been done, but the way it's set up that it's a blind fund that the industry has no control over what the NCRG or ICRG finds but we need to get back to that, I think, and again own responsible gaming.
So I think it's important to remember, you're exactly right, it's
mm-hmm.
always a good idea to remember where you came
right.
from in order to know where you were. 20 years ago there was argument within the psychological community,
mm-hmm.
the counseling community
right.
about exactly what the hell this was.
Mm-hmm.
It's problem gambling, disordered gambling, compulsive gambling, impulsive gambling.
Right.
Was it behavioral disorder? Was it a brain dysfunction? I mean, you asked 5 different people, not about the gambling industry,
right.
5 different people who were psychiatrists, and you would get 7 different answers
mm-hmm.
about what this was.
Right.
And that was part of what we needed to get into and
right.
part of what we needed to help to at least coalesce scientific debate and discussion around.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, in all candor, in the industry itself, there were still people who didn't believe the problem
mm-hmm.
gambling was real.
Right.
And the only way to make it real was to fund scientists
mm-hmm.
who could come out with information to say, look, this is what it is, this is how it works, and this is how, if we're going to interact with it, this is how we need to be processing it.
Yeah.
And that was incredibly effective.
Yeah.
So helping to identify and coalesce a contextualization and understanding of what we now know as gambling disorder was critically important. We're at a different point now. We're at a different inflection point now. We've come that far. Mm-hmm. So now we've got to take a moment and reassess what does responsible gambling mean going forward.
Okay.
And it's happening at this moment where technology is exploding, cashless is exploding, online gambling is exploding, sports gambling is exploding. There's an awful lot going on that we really need to be in a position as operators, as community members, as parents, to help educate ourselves, our kids, our communities on how to do this activity responsibly.
Sure.
And yes, it's true, 95% of the people who gamble do so with no negative effects.
Right.
That's great. Mm-hmm. So let's focus on the 5%. Let's make certain that that goes down. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're ever going to actually reduce the incidence of addictive behavior.
Right.
That is a very, very complex nut to crack. Mm-hmm. But I think the subclinical is an area we can have a very profound impact on.
Right, yeah.
There's no reason for people to get into trouble, and there certainly is no reason that they would get into trouble because we just got a little too excited about the marketing that we're doing.
Right, right.
That's the kind of stuff that I think we can better understand.
Well, the problem with this addictive personality, which we discovered through the research at ICRG, is that people with problem gambling generally have problems with some other addiction, comorbidity, with alcohol, with sex, with drugs, or something like that. And which one do you treat first? How do you segment each one?
Well, so it is you've got a couple things going on at the same time. You have genetic predisposition, which is what was going on with your parents and your grandparents, and maybe even going back many generations. Mm-hmm. Because if there has been addiction and trauma in your past, then you are walking into a situation with a greater propensity to become addicted to something.
Right.
Then it's just a matter of exposure to a given activity or a given substance that may trigger that addiction. Mm-hmm. It's not about the activity itself or the substance itself. It's about your genetic makeup that may trigger that addiction. The comorbidity, you're absolutely right, is that gambling disordered gambling patients are much more likely to also have a problem with other substances, drugs, or alcohol. Huge number of smokers. I think it's well in excess of 70% who are also smokers in that group. A fundamental question that's going to take a while longer to get to is whether or not any of these substance use disorders, drugs, alcohol, or gambling, are secondary issues or primary issues. Mm-hmm. Do the anxiety and depression help drive people toward those things, or did those things bring on anxiety and depression?
Right.
And there is no binary answer here, right? I think that there's probably a blend of circumstances that exist in different people, different circumstances in their lives.
Right.
But here again, this gets to the whole notion of a lot of the work ahead for the ICRG to continue to try and get answers to.
And most of the operators are still funding the ICRG at the level they started at, or even higher than that, most of the major operators. But now we have new entrants to the market from the sports betting side. We have the networks, we have the social media platforms, we have the professional teams now, and so they really have to step up, don't they?
Well, I think everyone needs to step up.
Yeah.
We've just come through an incredibly difficult time all the way around, and the ICRG, along with any number of other charities around the world, stood down for the last 18 months.
Right.
We had to.
Yeah.
First off, a lot of the research that was ongoing needed to be put on pause.
Right.
So in terms of funding for it, that got put on pause. Mm-hmm. So there's been kind of a lull here for a bit. We now have a brand new president, a wonderful man named Art Piekowski, who's spent more than 40 years in the nonprofit sector raising money for mm-hmm. great causes.
Right.
He is fully energized. The board is very excited about his tenure with us. We now need to re-energize and reinvigorate the donor base and expand the donor base, not only among those who traditionally have given.
Sure.
We totally appreciate what they've been doing. Mm-hmm. We've got to re-engage them. We've got to expand among traditional donors, mm-hmm. folks that, frankly, we haven't been in touch yeah. with. It's not them.
Yeah.
We haven't been in touch sure. with them. And we have to begin to talk to the folks you're talking mm-hmm. about. Teams, leagues, networks, brand new entrants into the sports gambling community
sure.
that we simply haven't reached out to. Mm-hmm. And it's on us to do that.
Yeah.
That's on us. It's no one else.
Right. And they have to do more than just the lip service, I would imagine. They have to really, really understand where the ICRG is going and UNLV for that matter.
I think it's just critically important for the industry to get beyond the notion that it's okay to say that your commitment to responsible gambling is the fact that you have said that you have a commitment to responsible gambling.
Right.
And that your commitment to responsible gambling is the fact that you have complied with all of the minimum standards that you're required to in any given jurisdiction.
Yep.
The industry has to show more initiative, more engagement on this topic if it's going to be taken seriously. Mm-hmm. And look, for better or worse, the one thing that sports gambling is going to do is shine a huge light on this activity
right.
to millions and millions of people mm-hmm. who heretofore have not ever thought about gambling.
Right.
And now it's in their face. And you can already begin to feel a little bit of the backlash mm-hmm. starting.
Absolutely.
If they don't think that this industry is responsible, the kickback is going to be really
right.
hard.
Right.
Family of top-performing cabinets by IGT are a culmination of years of research and development, a passion leveraging both internal expertise and customer feedback. The results are a series of astounding cabinets that command attention with sleek modern features, ergonomically perfected curves, and bold design. Every aspect of the Peak cabinets have been scrutinized to ensure a comfortable gaming experience, resulting in exceptional performance you can bank on. Learn more at igt.com/peak. Now back to our podcast.
Colleagues at UNLV, Jennifer Shadley, did a study on the impact of advertising, and we've already seen, you know, as you mentioned, the regulators pushing back on this. We're seeing way too many sports betting ads on football games and any kind of sporting event.
Look, I think that regulators themselves, short of seeing something that is violating a regulation,
right.
They're not reacting to this personally. I don't think that Chairman Rebuck or anyone else
right.
is reacting personally. Mm-hmm. I think they're hearing it from constituents.
Right.
And that's the thing that I think you've got to be super careful about. It's when people begin to coalesce in the community and start reaching out to their representatives, start reaching out to members of gaming commissions and control boards, that's when you're going to start to see the pushback that the industry really wants to try to avoid. If the industry is in a position to be able to say, oh, no, we've shown restraint,
right.
we've shown responsibility, mm-hmm. we are upstanding citizens, here are the things we're doing, then you've got to be proactive about
right,
that.
Sure,
you
absolutely.
Can't wait for
yeah.
it to come
oh, yeah.
kick you in the face
thing,
and
I mean,
then
look
try
what's
to stand
happening
up.
In Europe now with
right.
the ban on ads in Spain and Italy and the UK and things, a lot of other countries.
And then other silly things. I mean, taking a logo off of a uniform?
Right.
I mean, come on. That's really not going to change anyone's life.
Right.
A reporter yesterday asked about the Washington Capitals
right.
and whether or not the Caesars Sportsbook
right.
logo on a Capitals uniform was going to affect
right.
anyone's life. And
it's about 2 inches long.
It is about
it's not
that
like
big.
All the across the press like in soccer.
And, you know? and just so we're clear, I am a lifelong hockey fan.
Right.
So I do understand what it is to bring up kids in hockey, as sure. I've done with my own, and I'm now beginning to do with my grandchildren. And I don't believe it's going to have any impact whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I would also note that in every single hockey arena I have ever been in, there have been beer signs all over the place.
That's right. Yeah.
There have also been soda signs mm-hmm. all over the place. That doesn't mean that my kids drink too much soda mm-hmm. or drink too much beer.
Right.
It, they're just there. It's up to us as parents to bring some education into this
sure, sure.
and to explain this. And we have to also understand, because as operators in this industry, it's something we want. If we expect to see up on the Jumbotron a goaltender's goals against average and their season record and that they're plus 250 to let in right. more than two goals,
right, yeah.
that some nine-year-old in the stand is going to want to ask his mom or dad what that means. Mm-hmm. And if his mom or dad happens to be putting $5 on that particular bet,
right.
the nine-year-old might want to know what that means.
Yeah.
We need to be the one that helps mom or dad
sure.
with the right ways of being able mm-hmm. to explain that reasonably.
Right. Well, it's just like the responsible drinking idea.
Exactly.
Right, right. Okay. So we've had a lot of treatments developed over the years for problem gamblers, you know, self-exclusion, you know, limiting the time on device and several other things. Do we really know whether that works or not?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. What we do know is that people respond differently to different things. For some folks, a good talking to
right.
seems to be effective.
Yeah.
For others, it's a conversation with a trusted advisor.
Yeah.
It could be a religious leader. It could be sort of a mentor, mm-hmm. maybe someone at work, maybe an older family or an older relative, or a friend, an older
right.
friend.
Mm-hmm.
But for others, it's a self-help book.
Yeah.
For others, it is a clinician. It's going to a counseling session.
Right.
For yet others, it's inpatient treatment, going mm-hmm. to a
right.
a rehabilitation center, a rehab facility someplace mm-hmm. for a period of time. It's all over the map.
Yeah.
And it's completely different. What works for you may not work for me mm-hmm. and vice versa. There's a saying in the recovery community, you know, all roads to recovery
right.
are valid.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the rub now when it comes to dealing with it within the industry. Yes, all roads are valid, but at what cost?
Right.
And how is the money that we're going to be putting to this being used most effectively?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some studies that suggest that self-exclusion is not effective.
Right.
Yet, those same studies indicate that among those who did self-exclude, it was highly effective.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't work for a lot of people, but for those who use it, it works really well.
Right, right.
So does that mean you should just toss it? So then I look at, well, what's the cost of self-exclusion? All right, it's not the most efficient thing in the world, but actually it's not that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
So I think self-exclusion is something we could improve upon,
mm-hmm.
and there's some really good ideas, especially with improved technology,
right.
about how we might improve upon it, how we might make it more consistent, how we might break down state-by-state borders
right.
and
right.
make it more...
Right.
Uniform.
Our friends at GeoComply started this
Absolutely.
Organization called Conscious Gaming where
Absolutely.
They want to have a universal database, you know, not only on land-based, but also
for online.
So,
yep.
If you self-exclude, you self-exclude yourself from all gambling opportunities.
And I think that there's a lot of merit to that conceptually. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, there are several things, some issues with it that need to be ironed out, but should be.
Right.
I mean, we should
sure.
be having... very, very deep and serious conversations about how we overcome that, not why that should be an obstacle to
sure.
doing it.
Right, right.
But the cost of some other measures that are being forced upon operators, whether it's getting into the machine and saying to them, well, you must do this into every machine, and the cost of doing that per operator is going to be $15 million.
Right.
Now I think we need to say, all right, well, wait a minute. Is that actually going to be doing anything? And is that money better spent doing something else?
Right.
Is there a better use of that?
Mm-hmm.
It's a cost benefit analysis.
Sure,
I mean, it's like anything else in the world. You know, are we doing enough broadly in terms of prevention and awareness and education in the United States? That's an easy answer.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we're very, very focused, by and large, on what happens the moment a person enters a casino or opens up their account online.
Right.
Oh, we get very focused about that. But we really aren't talking about what happens long before they walk in.
Right, sure, right.
So I'm of the view that there needs to be a broader understanding of what this ecosystem ought to be looking like. That gets me back to the Reno model,
right,
which really is talking about all of that.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
We really ought to be thinking about this holistically and less so about assuming that the only time there's a problem is once someone is gambling.
Right, 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 great. I just have one more question. I've been noticing a change in vernacular in the last few months, actually, very, very soon. People aren't calling it responsible gaming anymore. They're calling it safer gambling. Is this just semantics, or is this an actual change in mindset?
It is not just semantics. It is a change in mindset, and it's one that I think the industry in general, and frankly, I think the community, the problem gambling community, needs to be thoughtful about. I think that there's something that seems very straightforward about increasing safety in gambling.
Mm-hmm.
We would all agree with that.
Sure.
We would all agree with that. The challenge is that in the actual understanding of that construct from a public health perspective, there's a big shift from having the individual at the center in responsible gambling, which is the Reno model.
Mm-hmm.
The individual is at the center, and all of the stakeholders play a role in supporting the individual. In safer gambling, the individual becomes one of the people, entities, in that mm-hmm. circle. That actually flies in the face of the recovery model.
Mm-hmm.
The recovery model has the individual at the center.
Right.
I am responsible for my recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Not them,
right.
Not her, not him, not someone else. I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little, I just don't think we should assume it to be semantics.
Sure, right.
And just go off and do this.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that, as I said at the very start of our discussion, I think that we have done kind of a terrible job of defining responsible gambling, of explaining it, of promoting it.
Right.
I think we've kind of started this in the late 90s, and 20 years later, we're still doing it the exact same way. Well, you know what? It's been 20 years. This ought to be a pretty good time to change that.
Right, right.
And I think rather than just shift, you know, I heard someone say the other day, responsible gambling is dead. We're going to call it safer gambling. Hang on. I think there is some room for both.
Sure, right.
There are some concepts within the notion of safer gambling I totally agree with. But I'm not so certain I would just toss responsible gambling away.
Right.
And lastly, I would point out that the broad public awareness of the context of a responsible activity has been long established, long before the AGA ever got involved.
Mm-hmm.
There was responsible drinking, responsible right. driving, and a variety of other activities where the consumer understood the notion of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I will repeat, I think that it's time the industry did a better job of defining and promoting that for gambling, as opposed to defining it within the context of problem gambling.
Okay. All right, I lied. I'm going to ask you one more question. you were involved with MGM when they put the game plan, the game sense system in. How is that going? I mean, has that made a difference for MGM and the other companies that are using that?
I think that it has made a big difference for MGM in a number of ways, and I think it's been a huge success for BCLC up mm-hmm. in Canada, and for others, certainly the state of Massachusetts, right. which has done a great job implementing it. I think that if we learned anything at MGM from the implementation, I think the thing that we didn't completely understand and probably need to be thoughtful about, and I'm saying we, I'm not there anymore, sure. but I think that MGM understands that they need to be thoughtful about, especially coming out of COVID mm-hmm. now, is that to really get something like GameSense or any other responsible gaming program fully incorporated into a company, it's about culture change. And I, you know what? I would call out Aristocrat Technologies mm-hmm. as one of the companies that absolutely understands that. Mm-hmm. And as Trevor and his team have really tried to change the culture in that company and responsible gaming is a critically important component of that, mm-hmm. but it hasn't sat alone.
Right.
It's part of a wholesale view of the culture of the company. Mm-hmm. And for GameSense, it happened at a time of great cultural change for MGM, mm-hmm. but we didn't quite understand the need to incorporate it mm-hmm. into that cultural change and mm-hmm. to explain it that way.
Sure.
And as a result, there were still too many employees who thought that if they were to suggest that a player might stop for a bit or take a break, mm-hmm. That their supervisor might be upset with
right,
them.
Right, yeah.
Or might write them off.
Sure, right.
Discipline them in oh, some yeah. way. Mm-hmm. And it was a bit of a stunning revelation.
Yeah.
You know, but look, these old habits do die hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, although I think that I know the management of MGM Resorts is incredibly enlightened on this mm-hmm. topic. And I know that because from the very moment I first mentioned GameSense, those meetings took 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, before
yeah.
I got approvals to yeah. move ahead, mm-hmm. there was never, ever any friction whatsoever.
Right.
Ironically, the friction was in the casino,
yeah.
not from management.
Right.
It was from employees who were just not really certain mm-hmm. if that was all right for them
right.
to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we understood how ingrained the culture was
sure,
among
right.
employees mm-hmm. in casinos.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they're going to take another run at it.
Yeah.
And then on a different note, but somewhat similar, we are just launching an initiative at UNLV with our colleagues at the San Manuel Band of Mission
okay,
Indians
right, yeah.
to reinvigorate their responsible gambling programs in a similar kind of way,
mm-hmm.
to really bring forth the culture of that tribe
right.
and to incorporate their culture into that program
right.
because they have a remarkable culture. It's
sure.
300
Absolutely,
years
yeah.
old. This didn't start with the advent of responsible
right.
gaming in 1996.
Right, yeah.
This is something they've actually been doing for their people and their lands and their community for
sure.
300 years.
And then you'll have an entree into Las Vegas with the Palms, which they recently bought.
Absolutely.
And so Alan, it's great to talk to you. I have a bunch more questions, but I'm going to save them for the president of the new president of the ICRG.
I want to
meet him and discuss it with him. And, you know, Russell Santa did a great job. So now the new guy's on, and we want to sit down with him as well. So thanks for taking the time to talk with us, and we really appreciate seeing you here.
It's always great to see you. Thank you.
Enjoyed this week's GGB podcast brought to you by IGT's Peak family of cabinets, performance driven and player tested across the board. Find out why operators bank on the power of the Peak at IGT.com/peak. To learn more about responsible gaming and the crucial role it plays in the future of the industry, visit GGBmagazine.com. For all the news of the gaming industry delivered to your desktop every Monday morning, sign up for free at GGBnews.com by using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.